Hello, dear listeners. Alicia here, back with Luke for our second Silo Season 2 mailbag. We'll be talking spoilers for the first 3 episodes of this season this time, so make sure you're caught up with both the show and our breakdowns. And Luke, what's our spoiler policy otherwise?
Okay, so Alicia has read all the books that go into making up the TV series Silo. I have read none of them. But Alicia will be talking about stuff that has happened in the books up to season 2, episode 3. So that includes stuff that happened last season. But we won't be talking about anything that happened in the books past that point.
Right. And there are extra spoiler casts you can find in the book club. You'll find those links in the show notes for anyone who is interested in that extra layer of spoilers with all the book spoiler speculation. So full disclosure, though, Luke and I do have screeners this year. We're not watching ahead of the episodes. We're recording for the episode breakdowns. So all of our speculation in those episodes are genuine. But since we need to wait until the episodes have actually aired and people have been able to watch them before we can do these mailbag roundups, Luke and I have watched a little bit ahead of where we're recording now. So we're recording through episode 3, full disclosure. We've watched through episode 5. We're actually going to be recording the episode 5 breakdown immediately after we finish this recording. But we promise not to give anything away, but just to resume our small tease. So, Luke, now that we've watched 5 episodes, how would you rank the 5 episodes of the season so far? No spoilers. I know you're more ambivalent about episode 4 than I am. Listeners will hear why in a few days, but we haven't talked about episode 5 yet.
I would go episode 5, 3, 2, 1, 4.
Okay. Wow. More than ambivalent about episode 4, I guess.
It's grading on a curve. This is Silo. It's all good.
Right. Yeah. For me, I don't know. I kind of am in the place right now where I feel like each episode is better than the last, I guess, because it keeps building on what's happened in the last episode.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, listeners, if you think me and Alicia aren't getting off on the fact that we know more than you do and that we've got screeners, you are so wrong. I'm enjoying the power and sense of omniscience.
Well, speak for yourself. I'm stressed about it.
Fair enough.
There are advantages also to watching live with everybody else. And like, for instance, I'm not posting as much about it on Blue Sky because,
you got to be careful what you post.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have to be a little careful here, but we are locked in. We are talking episodes 1 through 3 spoilers and no further. Yeah. But I can tell listeners things are definitely reaching a crescendo by mid-season. So we do these mailbag episodes every week or two as we can work it into our schedule. So do keep sharing your thoughts on the rest of the season. You can send them to woolshiftuspodcast@gmail.com. That is the best way to do it. It makes my life easier. But we also, of course, want you involved in the discussion on Discord and Blue Sky. You'll find all those links in the show notes. But again, today we're going to be focusing mostly on episodes 2, Order, and episode 3, Solo, of the second season. So, here we go.
Now opening the listener feedback channel.
So, this feedback is mostly grouped by person, but I'll admit it's a little haphazard. So, just come along for the ride, and we'll be talking through episodes 2 and 3 especially, but like through each other. So, we've got first from Jean. After episode 2, he said, "Okay, Robert, I'm sorry, but you, my friend, are number 1 on my list of evil and doom." I don't know. You and I kind of, I guess maybe we can't comment on that.
No, I guess we can't. But Jean, it's taken you the whole of season 1 and 3 episodes of season 2 to come to the conclusion that Sims might be a bit of a wronger. Like, where have you been, Jean? What show have you been watching?
Oh, I think he's always thought that, but maybe just, you know, well, it's like we say, we say Sims Nard for a reason, because yeah, they both have their moments. Yeah.
They certainly do.
So Danji, after episode 2, says, just finished the pod for episode 2 and I really enjoyed your discussion. Regarding Bernard's reaction to Meadows giving up alcohol, while he may have had concern, I read his reaction as mostly skeptical. She had only been sober for a few hours, and I saw a bit of mild bemusement in Bernard's reaction to this news. What makes Tim Robbins' portrayal so great is that there were many emotions mixed in some very subtle acting. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, Tim Robbins is an Oscar. I'm not sure whether he's an Oscar winner, but he's certainly an Oscar nominated actor.
He's one of the greatest actors alive. We can say that.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of people who are commenting on his reaction. As far as him being skeptical about Meadows giving up alcohol, yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that makes sense.
And I mean, as far as we know, she's been drinking heavily for years as well.
Yeah, like 25. So,
yeah.
Yeah. After episode 3, Denji says, that was fun. Zahn was great. Great to see the Meadows character develop more. I really like how so many of the characters have history between them. Meadows and Bernard, Sims and the retired Raider, I guess that's Camille, Knox and Shirley, and now Juliet and Solo. Oh, and the retired Raider, I guess, is Reggie from the one who shot. Knox and Shirley, and now Juliet and Solo are for the first time each meeting someone new to their world. Did Juliet speak more lines of dialogue in this one episode than she had in all previous episodes combined? Not a criticism, just to see her speak so much was a new aspect of her character I do not think we've seen. Yeah, let's pause there. I think that's also why she, like, her conversations with Solo are so adorably awkward.
Yeah, because, like, Solo's been on his own for 20 plus years, mm-hmm. and Juliet is not she's not a very verbal person. She's not, she says what she wants to do by doing things rather than by talking about it.
Right. And now she's put in this position, especially we see in episode 3 where she has to really coax him out of hiding.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily, she's not the one known for the honeyed tongue, you know?
No.
Yeah. So Dan says, love the pod for episode 3. Great discussion, which was fun to listen to. I do not think it's such a stretch for the Order to rely on Mechanical to be blamed for the silo's problems. A look at U.S. history shows how this allegory plays out. In the mid to late 1800s, poor white people in the South were convinced by wealthy slaveholders to fight in a war that benefited the wealthy, not the poor. Just over 100 years later, the country was convinced to go to war overseas to fight the communist boogeyman in Vietnam. A generation later, this quote-unquote Southern strategy solidified the former Confederacy to vote based on social issues, not economic ones. Today, we see immigrants and the LGBT community take the place of Mechanical. They are to blame for the ills of the poor white people, we are told, and plenty of voters buy in. And Paul Kent responded, having listened to It Could Be Said, I'm now intrigued to hear Luke comment on that last part.
Okay. I mean, well, thank you for listening to It Could Be Said. We're always looking for new listeners. I mean, I think it's a little bit risky to draw straight parallels between our world and the silo, because the silo is a much more precarious existence. It's an entirely artificial environment. And whilst I do take everything that was said there on board, the fact is that Mechanical have much more leverage over the actual survival of the silo and the survival of all the people in it than any of the groups that were mentioned in that email. So whilst I think there are parts of silo that work as allegory for the real world, I also think it's a very different environment, literally a very different space. And so I'm still not convinced about this whole idea about turning people against Mechanical, just because of the leverage Mechanical have over everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's not quite, I mean, I guess they're in a more abstract way. You could say, for instance, with immigrants now, immigrants often make up a lot of the the workforce. So, you know, there's a current issue now where there's calls for mass deportations from the U.S. And morality aside, just looking at the economic side of it, there are great fears that there's reasoning that said it's to help ease, you know, the crunch on housing. However, one of the issues with housing is that it is being built by the same people that they're trying to deport. So that is going to get in the way of that. And it's going to, it is shooting yourself in the foot to do things like this. And this does happen, but I suppose it's just so much more visible in the silo world because
more direct as well. Uh-huh. I think is the issue.
You don't have to think about it for a second to get it. It's like, but we can't talk about that. But we'll talk about in episode 5, you know,
We are being so careful. Listening.
I know. See, this is hard.
Yeah.
In episode 5, this is a question that will come up again. And well, I'll say we talked about it quite a lot in episode 4 too.
So. Yeah.
So when you hear episode 4, know, Dan, that we had these conversations before getting your feedback. And I do take that on board. And I am trying to think about more how this does fit with the real world analogy. And also I know this is different for Luke's coming at it from the political science perspective. And I'm trying not to be like, but in the book, even though you might hear me say that every few times. It's just, yeah, but regardless, even when we get frustrated with how the show handles complex societal dynamics like that, the fact that it's asking these questions and pushing us to have these conversations says everything.
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah, and that's why this is such a good show.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons, certainly.
Yeah. One of the reasons, obviously, yeah. Okay, so Ashley S. says, after episode 2, did anyone else notice the mention of OSHA in the order book Bernard referenced? You can only read the first few lines, but I thought that was very interesting. It states Silo Emergency Action Plan Standard. I have to say I should have paused and read. I know that the graphic designers, like we talked about last season, Pippa, I forget her last name, sorry. She specifically ended up writing a whole bunch of text for the pact. So maybe it was also her or someone else did the same for the order where they just filled in a bunch of the text. So there is stuff to read for the actors and for viewers who pause like that. So, I can see why it would be OSHA might be a basis for creating these plans. What do you think, Luke?
Yeah, no, that is interesting. And we can't rule out the possibility that the silos were originally built by the US government. And therefore, you know, OSHA and other federal agencies might be canonical in this universe.
Yep. Yeah, so far the only location clue we've gotten is a tour guide in Georgia. So Georgia is in the US state, not the European country.
Yeah.
And Ashley says, also, just a correction from the pod. I don't think Bernard watched until Juliet took the helmet off. He tells the screen device to stop after she gets close to the entry to Silo 17. So I don't know if he recognized that he needs to act now before watching more, or if that's demonstrating him watching back the quote-unquote video from Juliet's suit after it already happened. It's unclear to me, but I thought that was interesting. Yeah, the timing, because they did like the whole episode 1 in Silo 17 and then the whole episode 2 in Silo 18, how the timing lines up isn't clear. But considering that alarm goes off, that stupid alarm, I guess he maybe was watching that live, but why would he stop watching then?
But by the way, if I can find it, I'll share an interview I was reading with Graham Yost the other day. I should have bookmarked
The showrunner.
And he was saying that one of the original ideas they had for season 2 was to keep that bifurcated structure, one episode in one silo, one episode in another, up until episode 6, and then bring them back together at the halfway point. but they basically gave up on that because they thought it'd be too infuriating for the audience.
I agree. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, even I already see with episode 3, people being like, oh, phew. Because also people have their favorite characters, and a lot of people's favorite character is Juliet, for instance. And then, you know, it's selling the other story short. Yeah, I like them together in the same story. And also makes it more clear they're playing out at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ashley says, I was on the edge of my seat realizing what this could mean for Sims. Bernard clearly does not trust him beyond his current role, so I wonder what will come of that. And Camille, it seems the Sims household may be in trouble. I just rewatched and noticed the other 3 books Mary Meadows has, The Story of Beowulf, a pre-calculus textbook, and what appears to be a Collins English Dictionary. So yeah, I think that whatever supply, this is Alicia speaking, I think whatever supply Solo has where he's getting like his music from and his knowledge of, I guess we can't, and his reading, whatever his reading may be. I think he's pulling from that Mary Meadows, you know, she was given free rein to pull from that same stockpile.
Yeah. I'd like to see some more modern literature being referenced. You know, I want a Dan Brown novel as one of the relics, or I don't know, like Silence of the Lambs or something. Everything seems to be sort of 19th century or early 20th century.
Well, I guess it depends on who put the relics there. Did they come in accidentally with people, or was it carefully supervised what was allowed?
Ooh, that's a question.
So Ashley says, correction, there are more than 3 books, but those are the only 3 I could identify. Well, thank you for picking out those 3. I didn't notice Beowulf or the Pre-Calc. Yeah, but that, okay. Mm-hmm. And she says, I also found it interesting that Judge Meadows' first name is Mary, another biblical name. And so Bernard thinks Juliet is actually dead, right? We never saw confirmation that he watched her enter Silo 17. So I'm assuming at this point, he genuinely thinks she is dead. And yeah, that's my question, because does he actually? Because I guess he knows she went in there, but I guess he thinks there's no way she could survive in there. But
yeah, I mean, is it episode 3 where he actually says that?
What?
I'm getting, because he says to Meadows when they
that they she's meet, dead. Yeah,
when they meet in the the bunker that.
I think that was episode 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he says, but then again, I never know if he's lying to Meadows or not, you know?
It's true.
Any words that come out of his mouth could be a lie.
This is very true, yeah.
So after episode 3, Ashley says, I loved seeing Juliet struggle to connect with Solo. The way he runs after her, ugh, my heart, so sweet. The reveal that had me most excited, though, was that they confirmed the quote-unquote medicine used to control people's memories. I wonder what the extent to which they can calibrate the dosage is, but it sounds like Sims is comfortable knowing what he can get away with. And I would say with Sims, like, I don't know if I believe him on this or not either.
No, I don't. I don't think you can calibrate. I just don't think you can calibrate drugs that precisely.
We don't know what they are necessarily capable of, but I don't, yeah, he's just another one. Anytime he says something, 50% chance it's a lie. Same with his wife, even though I like her. Ashley says, another fascinating reveal from Meadows. The order states to blame Mechanical and unite the rest of the Silo against them. Wow, no wonder she feels so much guilt and shame for her years of service. Yeah, I think Meadows is smarter than the order, personally.
Yes, I think Meadows has outgrown it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe that's why she left.
Yes.
But there's also whatever this secret is that, yeah. Ashley asks, has anyone else been pondering whether people from other silos have successfully infiltrated 18? Ever since Martha said she had a nightmare that everyone in the silo left her, I started to wonder if she wasn't originally from 18. If that's a dead end, I'm still thinking about the possibility, or was there maybe a mass exodus from 18 through the door in the digger room back when the quote-unquote rebellion happened? I don't know. All fun things I'm wondering. Either way, Knox knows more than he's telling people. He says he knows what the names down in the tunnel mean now. I can't wait to find out what that means. Do you want to comment on the idea of people infiltrating 18?
Well, I mean, I think it's entirely possible at some point in like the deep history of the silos that there was migration between the silos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've said all season long, and I think I might have even said it in season one, that I think the silos are connected in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least have been connected in some way.
Hmm.
I'm not sure I buy Martha having come from another silo. I think that's probably too recent.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly possible, like, at some point in the distant past, that people from other silos, that people from these 50 silos intermingled, intermarried, you know, were part of a much more cohesive whole.
Hmm. Yeah, so the tunnel down from the digger room is a show addition. So I am as lost on that as anyone else. It seems to me unlikely that Martha or the others came from another silo, but I can't rule it out. I don't know. I don't know what the tunnel's about. I need to find out. All right. So Ashley ends with, my theory or hope is that Juliet and Solo will make suits and leave Silo 17 in time to run into / save Meadows and bring her back to 18. I never even thought about Juliet coming back out 17 through the top. So now I've gotten my head about the timing of that and Meadows' trip outside. Yeah. I'd say that is. Well, I feel like I can't, there's book spoiler things I can't say, but yeah.
Yeah.
They seem to be pointing at something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Her Royal Bubbliness says, after episode 2, Bernard came off as more human because I always thought he was omniscient on the silo, but this episode showed he wasn't at all. I think Bernard underestimates Sims on how perceptive he is, and that may become his undoing. As Luke said, one might just kill the other this season. What do you think? Do you think Bernard underestimates Sims?
No, actually, I think he's got a very good handle on who Sims is.
Yeah?
But I don't think he's got as good a handle on what he might be capable of.
Mm. Well, I guess that's underestimating.
Sort of. But yeah, no, I don't think Sims is cleverer than Bernard thinks he is. He might be more ruthless than Bernard thinks he is.
Oh, I think also Bernard may not realize at this point how much of a role Sims' very clever wife plays
in
his decision making. So maybe he's underestimating the Sims family unit as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. She continues, what do we think is running through the mind of Juliet's father as he just sits watching the screen the next day? This just made me think of how in real life, in the call for justice and truth, we completely lose sight of the people close to the victim and asking how they're feeling. Yeah. I like to see how he's like taking comfort, I guess, in, we see him stage his own rebellion in the next episode with the birth control and the, you know, not doing the Code Orange thing that he was told to do. So I think he's being inspired by her. I think he's handling it all very well considering, but it seems like anytime there's like a baby girl within arm's reach, he's cuddling that baby.
This is true. There's a lot of surrogate parenting going on.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. And he's like, baby girls for everyone. Name them all Juliet. Oh, poor daddy, Dr. Nichols.
Yeah.
I want good things for him. Luke wants him to die, apparently. I'm just kidding. I know you don't.
No, I don't want him to die. I just think he will.
You just keep predicting it.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Yeah. All right. So Precious asks, does Bernard also desire a hot air balloon, or he's a believer through and through, come hell or high water? I'm deeply intrigued by Judge Meadows, and I want to know everything. And yeah, I think Judge Meadows is like I said, it's show edition, but she like rapidly became maybe my favorite character this season.
She's certainly the most enigmatic character I think we've run into in the silo. And like what she really wants and what she really believes are still something of a mystery.
I always love people who are both clever and willing to call bullshit. And she is both of those things to a T.
I mean, in answer to your question, Precious, I think Bernard believes in protecting the silo above all else. Hmm. And that belief is pure and it's genuine.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Abby, who is my co-host for the Silo spoiler cast, after episode 2, she said, "The most shocking part to me was the fact that Judge Meadows, Mary, was Bernard's former shadow. A very interesting relationship, still lots to find out. Why did she quit? How was that even possible or allowed? What secret is she hiding that Bernard doesn't know about? Was she working in judicial before she became temporarily Bernard's shadow and went back to her former job with a promotion to judge and the perks thereof? Also, after 25 years in the bottle, she will have a rough time now. With all the resolve about quitting, that will not go smoothly. Bernard's skepticism is warranted. Very good acting from both." Talked about this a lot with Alicia on the episode 2 spoiler cast. So yeah. Thoughts? I mean, I do, yeah. The question still remains, like, what is the process for the shadows in the TV show? How far did she get into that process? How much does she know? What does Bernard know that she doesn't? Why and how did she quit? The episode 4 spoiler cast will be about shadowing the head of IT and what all that entails. So there will be some speculation there, but we're still waiting to find out what the show answers to these questions are.
And I mean, there must be a way of shadows quitting or being removed and replaced, because it must happen all the time that you thought somebody was going to be an appropriate shadow and it turns out that they're not, or
it
just doesn't suit them.
I would say that's not a problem for every other job in the silo except head of IT, because the shadow for the head of IT ends up learning the secrets that nobody else knows.
That's true.
And I do think in that regard, you know, that the perks that we saw Mary, that we see her having the access to the relics and all that, I feel like that's not because she's a judge, but specifically because she's an ex-shadow head of IT. Like, this is sort of a shut you up. Okay,
a bribe, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Right, so after episode 3, Abby said, "Can they just move and sit in a more stable place rather than on that bridge?" Just looking at that last shot of them on that narrow bridge is giving me vertigo. Steve Zahn is just perfect for this role and does the nervous hermit very well. He just craves connection with another real human being. Jules is sometimes blunt, "Why are you alive?" But also she gets it, especially being a longtime friend of Martha Walker, gives her some experience and understanding. Another thought. Notice how Bernard talks about Jules as if he's so surprised that she figured stuff out beyond his analytics. As if he can't conceive of another person in the 10,000 who can be as smart as him. Hopefully this underestimation of people will be his undoing. By the way, spoiler alert to Bernie boy, Holston figured out the cameras before Jules. Mm-hmm. Even with all the surveillance, you can't watch and know everything.
Okay, Abby, I am now going to call him Bernie boy. From now until the show ends.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think this is one thing that worries me about him and Meadows is that I think she's more clever than him. Like, he's smart in the puzzle box kind of way, but she has more wisdom, I think, in the way she's like, forget what, you know, he has to get instructions from a book. And she's like, let's use our brains here for a minute, Bernie boy. And let's think about, like, maybe don't arrest someone from the down deep when they're on the verge of rioting, you know. I mean, and just the fact that she is more clever than him is worrying to him, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bernie boy is intelligent, but Meadows is wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the distinction.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay, so Rocky Zim, after episode 2, says, "Someone better get her that damn hot air balloon, LOL." Interesting how Bernard is using Juliet's accomplishment as a positive. I like how he did that, but it obviously will backfire. I think Knox wants the guy in the down deep to make him a weapon, so he has the only one. Yeah, what do you think? So the guy in the down deep was, again, the character's name is Mark Chambers, and he was the one in like the metalworking shop who's used as the cool steampunk wheelchair.
Yeah, cool steampunk wheelchair. Yeah, possibly. Because like the metalworking shop, they might be able to produce primitive firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't just be like, you know, a big lump of metal to hit somebody over the head with. Like,
right.
They might be able to produce like a single shot rifle or a single shot pistol.
I mean, we know that Judicial has like actual guns, but yeah, they might be able to make their version of it or something. But then he asked, Knox asked Mark not to make weapons for anybody else who asked, but Mark kind of looked around before he said yes, so jury's out.
Yeah, and that kind of implies that they have experience in making weapons, or at least the know-how to do it.
I mean, I guess if you need to work metal, where else are you going to go?
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
After episode 3, Rocky Zim says, I like seeing Meadows watching the videos of life before the silo. I thought for a minute it could be Meadows as a kid, but that would be too long ago, I think. And yeah, I wanted to include this one just because I saw a lot of people speculating on what the videos were that she was watching. And I take it to be just, it was all different sorts of families and stuff. I just take it to be a collection of home videos that's in the relics.
Yeah.
Just random home videos from the before times. Yeah. Satuichi says, Walker might be my favorite character. Full stop. Like, that's fair. I felt that needed to be heard.
Yeah.
After episode 2, Maureen D says, Knox is moving down the chart steadily. He abandoned Shirley in that secret area below the silo where she fell asleep. Nice guy from way back. After Mayor Johns was poisoned, I tense up whenever someone is offered a drink. So, yes, agreed.
Yeah.
As far as Knox, I'm curious how you feel after episode 3, Maureen, because I was saying that's where he was starting to get a redemption arc with me.
Let's face it, we all did stupid stuff when we were kids.
Yeah, well, yeah. He was like in his 20s, but okay. Yeah, he was at the stupid age of early 20s, yeah.
We all did stupid stuff in our 20s as well.
Yes, this is true. This is true.
Yeah.
So just some, we talked about this last season, but Paul Kent pointed out Billy Postlethwaite, Hank, is the son of the late British actor Pete Postlethwaite, who was a very familiar television actor here in the UK and movies. And Listu said, one of my favorite performances of his was Usual Suspects. And Maureen D says he was also in The Name of the Father. I know
He was Mr. Kobayashi.
Hmm.
My favorite Pete Postlethwaite performance is in a film called Brassed Off, which also includes a very, very, very young Ewan McGregor, like a baby Ewan McGregor.
I don't even know that movie.
It's about a brass band at the Yorkshire Colliery competing in, like, it's the typical, like, you know, outsider competing in the big prestigious competition in the capital, and they win.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, he's one of those faces that I knew, but I wasn't as familiar with him as you Brits are.
Yeah, like, he's one of those guys that turns up, that was in everything that was on British television in the 90s and early noughties.
Yeah. And Maureen also points out Rick Gomez, Patrick Kennedy, was in Band of Brothers, playing a great character that did impressions, which I know people recognize Rick Gomez from other things.
Oh, shit, really?
You know who he is.
He was gonorrhea.
He was gonorrhea?
Oh, my God.
What's the character's name? I didn't watch Band of Brothers.
Yo, the character's name was Garnier, so everybody called him gonorrhea. Of course he is. Oh, how stupid of me not to recognize it. Oh, man.
Well, I do want to see him in more stuff after seeing his performance in this show. He really made me laugh.
Oh, wow. I can't believe I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, I guess he's been in other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Doob71, aka Stu, says, just watch the ep and I will definitely be watching again this weekend and pausing the moment Bernard opens the order. So this is about episode 2. From the get-go, this episode was just fire. I am just going to gush over season two, just cracking TV. If David gets the chance to watch, can't remember if he is or not, would be interested in his take on some of the production work in episodes one and two. Episode one seemed close in, tight, and almost claustrophobic, reflecting Jules and her journey into Silo 17. Whereas in episode two, it felt really cinematic, even in the scenes of one-to-ones. Loving what the showrunners are doing and the differences between what's on screen and what's in the books is really interesting. Will we see Meadows taking the long walk? Oh, and I have to say, Hank is turning out to be a real quote-unquote company man in this episode, episode two again. Bro, side with Mechanical or you might become a copper. And then after he says, done my rewatch of episode two, and I'm with Alicia. It was a lovely, tender moment of Doc Nichols cradling the baby girl, showing the deep feelings he is holding in check about Jules. Such a fleeting moment, but beautifully played. On second viewing, I withdraw my statement about Hank being a company man. He's just a guy getting by, trying not to upset the apple cart. He's good people in a bad situation. The judge is certainly a complex character and loving the dynamic between her and Bernard. Is she the only other person in the silo he respects? Certainly seems that way. Rebellion is starting to spread, and I don't think Foxy Noxy is going to be able to contain it. I got strong flashbacks to the Expanse when Bernard was walking down the silo and spotted the Juliet Lives graffiti. All I could think was, remember the Cont. So, yeah. I'm glad you came around on Hank.
Hank is rapidly becoming one of my favorite characters.
He's in a tough position, but I think it's hearts in the right place. And I think it's the same with like he, Knox, and Shirley. All of their hearts are in the right place, but like, can they get their methodology aligned?
Yeah.
You know, because they all feel pulled with different, you know, they all think doing the right thing looks a little differently than each other at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. All right, so we got an exchange about Bernard and Mary that I'm just going to read the conversation between. So the TCS said, I think Bernard will give her the good tape. The question is, would Bernard betray Mary? And the TCS said, I think Bernard will give her the good tape. He seems to really hold her in high regard. So if she does this for him, he will give her the balloon ride escape she wants. Listu says he will only provide the tape if it is in his best interest, even if they were an item before. He is the snakiest snake that ever snaked. I have to agree. Ashley says, I agree with you at the TCS that they have a history and it's the closest thing Bernard might have had to a relationship, but I still ultimately believe that Bernard would betray Meadows to prevent an uprising. Maureen D says also, if a second person goes over the hill, that could cause an uprising as well. And he must figure out that she will die anyway. Sub-Zero says, should we start shipping Bernard and Meadows? Bernardows? Maynard? And I point out that her first name is Mary, so I suggested Marnard. But for Elisa wins, she says their couple name is Bernary.
What do you think? Bernary.
Yeah. Are you on board with Bernary?
Yeah, I'm here for the burnery, yeah.
Feel the burnery.
Feel the burnery, yeah.
All right, after episode two, Sub-Zero said, I'm not sure how he's getting the helmet feed from so far away. It's not Bluetooth. There has to be a satellite link or something akin to a cell tower. Maybe we have someone with an IT background on here that can chime in. I'm fascinated by the stark contrast of the analog lives for the citizens of the silo juxtaposed with all this high-tech gear being used to control them. And yeah, we see quite a difference in the level of technology between, first of all, now we've seen like the highest level of technology in that secret bunker room.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I have to point out that someone else pointed out that... if you look as they show a wide shot of that bunker room, the version that Bernard's in, well, obviously we haven't seen inside Solos yet. There is a door in the back on the right, a closed door.
Okay.
So just, yeah, that was pointed out to me that it's there. So I'm passing that on. And yeah.
So that bunker complex could be larger than what we've seen on screen.
Right. Which makes me feel better for Solo if he's been in there 25 years.
Well, it might explain where all the chicken stew is coming from
as
well.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't think it's in the drawers around them that we save it. So we see that's the highest level of technology that we've seen. And also we see that the projector that Mary is watching those home videos on, that looks a little bit ahead of our time.
I think we mentioned that in the
main app. Right. And then we see a jump down to what the janitor's closet see, what the watchers see. It's still video, but it's, you know, it's slightly, rather than being slightly ahead of us, it's maybe on point with us, maybe slightly behind.
Maybe slightly behind, yeah.
Yeah. And then versus the rest of the silo, who they don't even have cameras for pictures. They're like drawing their loved ones to hang on the walls because they don't.
I mean, they do have computers, so.
But they have very basic like 80s computers.
Yeah, I would have said DOS. Like late 70s DOS kind of.
Yeah.
Computing, yeah.
Well, late 70s is still like roomfuls, but yeah, like
okay, it's sort of
late 80s.
Sort of, yeah. First generation kind of Mac.
Yeah.
Kind of, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, but and they know, the rest of the silo knows photographs exist because they have photographs on their IDs, but they don't have cameras at home, and most of them have no idea that there's video cameras monitoring them all over. That's something Juliet had her mind blown by. They've never seen video.
Do you think there are silo-wide Pong tournaments?
Pong tournaments?
Yeah, also, you know, with the computer like that. That game you used to have with the two lines and butting the ball backwards and forwards.
I can't imagine that they leave communications between computers too open. I can tell you, they haven't said much about it in the show, but I can tell you in the books, they've already talked a lot by this point about how expensive it is to send electronic messages.
Yeah.
Which is, Juliet figures out is before she takes her walk, she figures out like, oh, they're blocking us from communicating freely. Duh.
Yeah. Because that's actually one thing we haven't seen a lot of. We've seen festivals in the silo, but we haven't seen much of what people do in their free time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they must make music. What would people do lo-fi? I mean, I guess they must have like wooden toys.
Yeah, the wooden toys. There's probably some kind of sports.
Right. Well, we've seen like the race to the top and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
And I think you probably have something like squash. You know, where you're hitting things up against the wall and it's bouncing back.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there must be a squash court somewhere. That would be a good one.
Yeah.
Wear people out, you know?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Probably boxing and combat sports.
Yeah. Sub-Zero continues about episode 2. In general, a great episode that lays the groundwork for the season. The growing rebellion in the Down Deep reminds me of the Tailies from Snowpiercer. You really want to root for the Down Deepers because they are laying it on thick with the Bernard/Judicial are evil vibes. However, we also saw what happened to Silo 17 when the rebellion succeeded. So as a viewer and non-book reader, I'm conflicted as to what outcomes I should be rooting for. They're keeping the mystery alive, even with all the revelations, and that's good storytelling. But if they do another episode without Rebecca Ferguson, I'm going to riot. Laughing emoji. Yeah, I mean, the laying it on thick part, I think that's maybe where you and I are chafing a bit about, you know, what we talked about the previous discussion about the pinning it on mechanical, but
it's just a little bit on the nose.
Mm-hmm. But I do, it is very interesting and from the books, by the way, just this question of like, they are the villains, Simsnard, you know, we keep calling them the bad guys. But at the same time, as we see in Silo 17, they are doing it for a reason, and they are legitimately, Bernard at least, who knows Sim's motivations other than getting a promotion, but Bernard does legitimately think this is what will lead to the long-term survival of the silo, and because he knows what can happen.
Yeah.
So after episode 3, Sub-Zero says, Meadows is definitely on her own team. She's with Bernard for her own benefit. I thought for a minute that they were going to be a dynamic duo, but now I'm not sure the partnership is going to last very long. And There's a childlike quality to Solo that's both disconcerting and heartwarming at the same time. He's deeply guarded, but also craves companionship. Steve Zahn's killing it. And there are way safer places to sit than on a makeshift bridge hanging out over a chasm with no guardrails.
I think we're finding out who in our audience has got
acrophobia.
Vertigo, yeah.
Acrophobia, yeah.
Yeah, acrophobia.
Okay, Rebecca Fan says after episode 2, I enjoyed the second episode quite a lot. Tim Robbins and Harriet Walter were the MVPs for me. I wonder if Bernard knows he is a bad public speaker, LOL. While I did miss Juliet, I love how she haunted the episode. Yeah, well put. She still, even though she wasn't in that episode, she hung over it for sure. I thought everyone always says Bernard's a bad speaker, but I didn't think his speech at the funeral last season was bad either. But I guess this shows I'm an awkward person. So
yeah, and actually, I thought that the speech at the funeral was pretty awkward. I thought this one was actually quite effective. And like where he's talking to Meadows later on about sort of running it, treating it as a series of calculations. And I love the fake hecklers. Mm-hmm. That is such a power move to hire your own hecklers.
Right.
Yeah,
it shows confidence. Like, yeah, you can have people say the worst things people are thinking because I know I could.
Yeah, I know. I've got an answer. Yeah.
And after episode 3, Rebecca Fan says, I love Juliet and Solo. Let them be the rest of the show. Laughing emoji. I love Juliet and Solo, but I have to say personally, I'm even more intrigued in what's going on in 18. I guess it's because there's more pieces moving over there.
Yeah, I think Silo 18 is kind of the heart of the show.
Although, I mean, the heart of the show is also Juliet. Yeah?
Yeah,
a skeptical kinda. Face from Luke.
Yeah, a skeptical face.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think, yeah, this just goes to show you that this really is an ensemble show.
Yes.
As much as Rebecca Ferguson is clearly number one on the call sheet.
Yes.
So Two Kids, Two Dogs, a.k.a. Nancy, says, after episode 2, disappointed with this episode because of the Meadows plot line. What is going on? Were they lovers who had a fallout? Why this now? Why speak in so many riddles? Just say what you mean. 25 years of drinking every day. Somebody check her liver. Really miss Juliet. And after episode 3, great episode. So glad that improved for you, Nancy. Love the scenes with Juliet and Solo the most. I'm listening to the pod and had to stop to make a comment about the Pez dispenser. Bernard does know what it is. In season 1, he looks it up in a book. And I just want to point out that this, Nancy, may not be what you're thinking of, the book he looks it up in. So the book that he looked it up in last season was a book that was created by the people who live in the silo over time, where they documented all of the relics that they basically took back into custody. So this is not... Like it's not a book that would come from before times, you know, and we also see that it's handwritten and things like that. So I think Bernard, in that case, he was not looking up what the Pez dispenser does, but rather he was looking up the chain of ownership. And that was how he figured out that George was the last one to be documented having it and traced that to Juliet.
Yeah.
The TCS says after episode 3, and it's all after episode 3 from here on out. It seems like Judge Meadows is way smarter than Bernard, almost in 3 steps ahead kind of way. And her ability to look past the order is seemingly unique. I love her so much at this point. And yes, I agree. Wise, as we said, wise. And yes, don't just read instructions from a book. Think about them. Sherry says, the Jane Carmody cleaning video on the hard drive was from 200 years ago. That really surprised me. So yeah, good catch, Sherry. We didn't mention that in our breakdown, but indeed, yeah, Bernard kind of has a throwaway mention. Mary asks him what was on the hard drive that he destroyed. And he said, some 200-year-old cleaning video. Beyond that, I don't know. And Yeah, so we know the rebellion happened 140 years ago, and we knew that this was from before the rebellion, so apparently it was from 60 years before the rebellion?
Yeah.
Unless he was just saying a number.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's like the thing in like ancient Greek history where they say 10,000, where really that just is a stand-in for a lot.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could go either way. But I mean, we know it's at least 140 years because he said the hard drive is from before the rebellion.
Rebellion, yeah.
Yeah. Paul Kent says, in the Bernard/Meadow scene in the high-tech looking room, which incidentally looks like a Damien Hirst installation.
It does a little bit, yeah.
I half anticipated a mystery voice to suddenly emerge from the video screen like Hal from 2001 Space Odyssey. Yeah, I can imagine that.
I'm sorry, Bernard, I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, how creepy would that make it? Oh, but you can imagine also if, like, the head of IT is so lonely because, like, he can't really talk to anyone about the stuff he knows.
Yeah, no, it's got to be very wearing.
Yeah. You would just have this, like, AI companion. So Paul continues, Meadows has this 25-year secret that I'm dying to find out. So there are more twists to come. Maybe we'll get a Meadows flashback. Shirley's mom, who knows? Could Bernard and Meadows have had a child years ago, but he doesn't know? I mean, he thought she had birth control in, but didn't. And Maureen D says it would be ironic if Shirley was his daughter. What do you think?
I've just got like, the scene in Empire Strikes Back now with Bernard and Shirley. No, I am your
I mean, that seems like a stretch theory to me, but I like it. Keep them coming.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, it is a bit of a stretch, but I like it. I wanted to.
Chumba Rooney says, I'm thinking after Bernard lets Meadows go out, he's going to secretly give her the shitty tape or put a secret hole in her suit or something so that when she goes out, she will die. So that he can try to put the idea that it's nice outside out of people's heads. I don't trust Bernard to do what he promised. He's always trying to spin everything. What's he going to tell the silo when Meadows is suddenly missing? He's got to have something up his sleeve.
Yeah, we can't really talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, don't trust Bernard seems like a way to go.
We can't really say anything.
Hmm. But David Mack says, I don't trust Bernard at all, but I also get the sense that if he's going to do right by anyone, it would be Meadows. I really like what they've done with Bernard in the show as a character. And Sub-Zero ends by saying, I think Bernard and Meadows trust each other as much as it is possible for them to trust anyone. Not saying they won't betray each other, but it would only be for what they consider to be an absolute necessity. And yeah, I that's the vibe I get too. I think that's fair to say. Like, it's, you know, as much like, I don't think either of them trusts a single soul on this planet, but they have more of a connection with each other than anyone else for what it's worth.
If only for the fact that they both know things that nobody else knows.
Right. But there seems to be more connection than that. Like, let's look back at the suit measuring scene.
That's hot.
It really felt like an excuse just to get close to her. But yeah, but I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. And I can't throw him at all because Tim Robbins is like twice my size.
Yeah. You're like 9 feet tall.
Yeah, so, okay, that was final thoughts. I think we'll avoid adding too many final thoughts of our own since, as we said, we watched a couple episodes ahead, but just suffice it to say, I think you're all asking the right questions. And, of course, not all the questions are answered in the next two episodes either. anything you want to add?
Only that I'm always very grateful for all the time people take to write to us. So thank you for everybody. Whether we read your comments out or not. Thanks for taking the time. Very much appreciated.
Yes, yes. And yes, I'm sorry if I missed your feedback. There's been quite the discussion going on Discord and other media, so I hope you all jump in. If you want to make sure I don't miss sharing your thoughts, then please email them to woolshiftuspodcast@gmail.com, and you'll find that link in the show notes. Voicemails are also welcome or encouraged. And yeah, we'll be I'm already starting to gather up for the next feedback roundup. So in the meantime, please do also come chat with us on Blue Sky and Discord, and you'll find those links in the show notes too. And check out my spoiler cast discussion with Abby for this week in the book club. The topic this week is Solo's backstory, and that's available to all subscribers and season pass holders. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to the new Silasins and Storiesins. I will shout out the newest members by name during the regular weekly breakdowns, which again, Luke and I are recording a couple weeks ahead of time. So if your name, it takes a couple weeks to call out your name, then you know why. And if you are not interested in the full subscription package, which includes, of course, those spoiler casts, but also our seasonal episodes, like we've got one coming up breaking down A Christmas Carol from Charles Dickens, the novella, plus including an audio drama from a short story he wrote before that seems to have been sort of a practice round for A Christmas Carol. And then, of course, future Dune episodes. That's subscribers have access to all of that as long as they're subscribed. If you're only interested in the Silo stuff, there are season pass options where you just pay a low one-time fee just for access to the first season plus the books or the second season spoiler casts or a reduced price for the combination thereof. And you'll find all those links in the show notes as well so that you can explore those options and see if any of that is for you. Of course, you don't have to pay to listen to this. If you enjoyed this listen and feel like you got something out of it, you can help us without spending a dime. Just share this episode with other people you think might be interested and leave us a positive review wherever you're listening. It really helps more people find the podcast. And do also check out the rest of the network. There's weekly Dune prophecy breakdowns on the Lorehounds feed, which I'm taking part of. And Luke, how are you feeling about, at the point we're recording, we've now seen two episodes of Dune Prophecy. How do you feel?
I've only seen the first episode. Oh, okay. Catch up with the second one.
Okay. So we already got your thoughts on that. Okay.
Yeah.
And also we have a skeleton crew is about to start as we're recording. And John's going to be leading some coverage of that on the Lorehounds feed as well. I'm definitely going to throw in some thoughts, but you know, it's quite busy right now. So Skeleton Crew is definitely one of the shows I've been most excited about coming out. So I'm definitely going to be sending in thoughts for every episode they do. I think it's going to be mostly John and Marilyn though.
Okay.
And lots of other stuff happening on the Lorehounds feed as always. Do also check out the rest of the feeds on the network. Properly Howard just started their A Few Good Movies season with all movies with the feature stars of A Few Good Men. There's also, of course, my own The Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, which is a project telling all of Star Wars in timeline order. And we've got Radioactive Ramblings. They're covering Arcane. They're covering Ghibli. They're covering the Red Rising books. And Nevermind the Music, where music theory, I know I'm not supposed to call it that, Mark, sorry, where music composition meets psychology. And of course, Luke, your own It Could Be Said. We've got Paul Kent listening.
Yeah, so thanks for that, Paul. I'm really busy marking papers at the moment and my co-host.
Doing this stuff.
I'm doing this stuff. My co-host, Simon Alvey, works in public relations, so this is his busiest time of the year. But we were talking the other day, and we are going to try and record something relatively soon because we've got a lot of stuff happening at the moment in UK politics. So we really feel like we need to weigh in. So watch this space.
Yeah. Okay. Any final thoughts before we sign out?
No, just thanks again to everybody for the feedback.
Okay, great. Well, we'll be back in your ears for our episode 4 breakdown on Friday, and we promise we'll bring your suit with the good tape.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.